In this, our second presentation on stocks, we will discuss the stock markets, the exchanges, the places where stocks are initially sold and then bought and sold amongst investors. So let's get started on slide 11 with a discussion of the primary versus secondary markets. The primary market is the market in which new issues of securities are sold to the public for the very first time. Now, you're not going to hear the term primary market. You're going to hear people discuss an initial public offering, IPOs. It's the first public sale of a company stock. And often it's in the news and people are all buzz, taking the company public, going public. But the reality is most retail investors do not participate in the primary market. And my recommendation is that we really shouldn't. For the vast majority of us, now there are some people who want to get in on the hot money. But no, we're going to concentrate on the secondary markets. Those are the places that when we say stock market, that's what we normally mean, the secondary markets. The markets in which securities are traded after they've been issued to the public. Because the vast majority of transactions takes place in the secondary market. So let's take a look at slide number 12 and ask the question, why go public? Why take your corporation from a private enterprise into a publicly traded corporation? Why do they issue common stock? Well, there are various reasons to initially raise money to start or expand the business, or to help pay for ongoing business expenses. For example, many of the startups here in San Diego, the biotech companies, just depend, their lifeblood is the secondary market, the primary market where they have to sell shares to the public to raise the $500 million or $800 million they're going to need to bring that wonder drug to the market, if they ever get it to the market. Do you see? Because they're not making any money now. They're burning. It's called their burn rate. How fast are they burning through their cash? So that's it. That's the way they survive. Hopefully someday they're going to actually start making money and not go away like a lot of them do. As a way to gain prestige and respect within the investment and industrial communities. For example, once a company just gets large enough, it's just expected that they're going to go public. And yes, those who started the business are going to be rewarded very handsomely. One example was Google. The folks who started Google were not too sure they really wanted to take the company public. And then the folks on Wall Street came a-coming and waving billions of dollars in front of them. And they decide, okay, let's... Because if a company is successful and goes public, the folks who started it become instant millionaires, billionaires. When Facebook. When Facebook went public, the tax bill for Mr. Mark Zuckerberg in California was $1 billion. The tax bill. Yeah, okay. And so would you be interested in taking a business public? Would you live, sleep, breathe for 7 years and bring the company public? Well, for everyone Google, there were a whole lot of Alta Vistas and Goes and Ask Jeeves and Dogpile and what other? Lycos? I can't remember. Yeah, this was a while ago. All the other search engines that went by the wayside. Remember MySpace? Some of you don't even remember MySpace. Yes, so it's risky. It's very risky. In fact, we call starting a business the ultimate investment. We'll discuss that way at the end of the semester. And also, once the company becomes sufficiently large, how do you divvy up the spoils? In other words, how do you sell your piece of the business when the business gets so large that it's in the size of a GE or Coca-Cola or Walmart or Google or Facebook or whatever? So that's one way to allow the shares of the company to change hands fairly easily. Now, what are some of the largest private companies? It turns out that there are not that many of them, very large private companies. One of the biggest, largest private companies is Mars? Yeah, M&M's, Snickers, right. You can buy shares in Hershey, but you can't buy shares in Mars. Slide number 13. Continuing, why go public? Now, the corporation does not have to repay the money. This is not a loan. You are buying a piece of the corporation. And the corporation is under no obligation to repurchase the shares of the stock. So the shareholder may or may not be able to find someone who will purchase the shares from them. Now, again, if it's a bona fide, that's a phrase that means real, you know, in essence, there's value there. If it's a bona fide company like Walmart or Coca-Cola, yeah, somebody's going to want to buy your shares. And the corporation is now a public entity. And as such, it has many rights and responsibilities that private companies don't have to worry about. If you went to Mars and said, how much money did you make last year? They'd say, who are you? You the IRS? We don't have to tell you. But if you went to Hershey and said, how much money did you make last year? They'd say, okay, here's our 10K, here's our 10Q. These are the documents that must be filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This is how much money we made in that quarter, how much money we made in the year. So I want you to remember those. You'll hear people talk about 10Ks and 10Qs. The 10K is the annual, and the 10Q is thank you very much, you're welcome. 10Q, you're welcome. I love to use that joke in the face-to-face class. I say, now, what was the annual? And they say, 10K. And what was the quarterly? And they say, 10Q. And I say, what was that? They say, 10Q. I say, you're welcome. And they look at me like, well, how much longer do we have to put up with these bad jokes? Okay, and also they must have at least one public meeting annually where shareholders can come and voice their approval or disapproval. And about 20 years ago or so, Sempra Energy, you don't know them, you know them as San Diego Gas and Electric, made some really boneheaded maneuvers. And so they would have their annual meeting here in San Diego, and shareholders would come and voice their disapproval for the boneheaded maneuvers they made. And so the management was kind of, I guess, got tired of it. They moved the annual meeting to London, one of the most expensive cities in the world. Yeah, we'll show you. Now, Chapter 5 goes into much detail about IPOs, initial public offerings. But dear students, IPOs do not usually live up to their expectation. And statistically, the typical IPO loses 50% of its value in 1 year. Now, that's not always the case, but that's the average. Some lose more. So Mr. Benjamin Graham, who was Warren Buffett's teacher, was not a big fan of these things. He said that IPO stood for it's probably overpriced, or imaginary profits only, or insider's profit opportunity, because the insiders become very, very wealthy. Yes, so we will not concentrate on these. The process of going public is fairly tedious and outlined in great detail in Chapter 5 of our textbook, but we're not interested. However, if you take the Series 7 stockbroker registered representative exam, that's the legal term for a stockbroker registered representative, you're going to have to know that system very well, in a detailed fashion. So that's something to look forward to. Slide number 14. So now let's get serious and talk about the stock market as we consider it. Because when people talk about the stock market, they're almost always referring to the secondary market. And you won't hear the term secondary market unless you're in the industry. That's the market in which securities are sold after they've been issued. It's also called the aftermarket, although I don't usually ever have heard that. Secondary markets provide liquidity, the easy method for transferring ownership of securities. As we said, if you have 100 shares of Nike or McDonald's, somebody wants to buy your shares, and an efficient mechanism for pricing and valuing those securities. So if you go to your banker and you want to get a loan, and they say, well, what assets do you have? You say, well, I have these shares. And they say, what are they worth? Well, go to the aftermarket, the stock market, the secondary market, and that's what a share of McDonald's is selling for. Make sense? Yeah. They're not perfect, as we're going to see, but they have been around for a long time, and, they could be worse. They could be a lot worse. We're going to see that they're often called very efficient, which is a good thing. Slide number 15. What are the two types of secondary markets? Well, we have the organized securities exchanges, and then we have the over-the-counter market. Over-the-counter? I don't understand. Look, this is an outdated comparison, folks. Due to technological advances, mergers, acquisitions, the traditional differences between the two have all been erased, and the changes are just getting started. So what are the securities exchanges? Well, these are the places that are centralized. There's one location where all the trading occurs, and they used a double auction market face to face. Still a tiny little bit done. It's all electronic now. And then the over-the-counter markets were widely scattered telecommunication networks through which transactions are made in smaller securities. Outstanding securities and smaller IPOs, and that used a quote-based system, which now is all online. So when they said widely scattered telecommunication network, that's what they meant. It first started with people just calling one another and saying, you got still have some shares of this, this guy that makes thingamabobs, this company. Oh, yeah, I got some shares. How much you want them? $25. And then they'd hang up on one another and say, I ain't paying $25. Hang up, turn around, call them back. I'll give you $22. That's all gone, folks. It's all electronic now. Slide number 16. So let's concentrate first on the securities exchanges. You like that? That's where the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, comes from, right? Historically, all trading was done on the exchange floor. Let's see if I get this working. Yay! Trading was conducted using a double auction. Now, you're used to a single auction. You're used to having one seller calling out the prices and multiple buyers, right? You see that in a state auction or a farm auction. But no, there were multiple sellers, multiple buyers, all calling out prices and quantities that they would buy and sell shares for. But that's almost all gone. There's still a few standing on the exchange floor, and I think they're mostly there for television. Now, due to both technology and a sheer massive volume of shares traded, things are almost all done electronically. There is still some human interaction, but it is far less than 1% of the total number of trades. And I don't know if some of these people, the last few remaining traders on the New York Stock Exchange, have become sort of celebrities, especially this one guy he has an iconic hair style, he looks almost like a conductor, a musician from the old days with the long hair sweeping back, and he's always pictured with a few other gentlemen, and it doesn't seem to be any more ladies down there. Used to be women down there, but it's very few people left. It's all electronic now, and by far The largest of these exchanges was and still is the New York Stock Exchange, the Big Board, as it was traditionally called. And it was responsible, and still is, for over 90% of the volume of transactions on exchanges. About 2,800 companies with about $23 trillion of market capitalization as of 2019. It was established as a members-only entity, basically a partnership, in 1792 when Wall Street really was next to a wall at the outskirts of New York. Not anymore, right? Companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange must meet stringent requirements. Traditionally, they were the largest and most prestigious companies. But that's not true anymore. We'll see. There's another entity in town, another big boy and girl in town. And if those companies do not continue to meet these stringent requirements, they are delisted. They're basically said, go away, we don't want you anymore. An example of this is Kodak. You ever hear of Kodak? You know, some of you young folks, you might have heard the term, but you've never seen those little yellow boxes that were in every store you went to. Film, yeah. Kodak developed the digital camera. They developed the technology to put them out of the business. Right. And they at first they did not want the digital camera to be successful. Too late. I think of the same thing. We developed this technology called Farcebook, and it's putting the government out of business. It's destroying our democracy. So you got to be careful. You got to be careful with technology. It has the tendency to change the course of history. So that's what happens. The big board says, you know, if you don't continue to meet our stringent requirements, you're out of here. There have been big changes at the New York Stock Exchange. Let's read at the bottom. In 1992, on their 200th birthday, which, you know, they made a big deal, the 200th birthday, you know, was that 20-some-odd years ago, almost 30 years ago. If you had told the folks at the New York Stock Exchange the next 20 years would see far more changes than their first 200 years, they would have thought you were quite insane. But what happened, as technology just pushed the industry forward, because there was no way the old face-to-face system of double auctions was going to be. They knew this. I mean, they knew this back in the 1970s and 80s when they started making more and more electronic trading. They decided they have got to make some serious changes. They purchased the Archipelago Electronic Exchange in 2005. They then became a publicly traded corporation, no longer a partnership, in March of 2006, and they merged with an electronic exchange in Europe called Euronext. They phased out the face-to-face double auction trading in favor of exclusively trading electronically, although there are a few traders on the floor. In 2011, the Germany's stock market, the Börse, I can't say it well, based in Frankfurt, tried to purchase the New York Stock Exchange, because now it's a publicly traded corporation. If you own 50% plus one of the stock, you own the company. But that was blocked by the European regulators. And then in 2013, the New York Stock Exchange was acquired for $11 billion by a 13-year-old derivatives trading firm from Atlanta, Georgia, the Intercontinental Exchange. So the New York Stock Exchange is no longer owned by the New York Stock Exchange. It's now owned by a company in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah, big changes at the New York Stock Exchange. The floor brokers, the independent brokers. You know, these people, they're the ones that you would see in the older, now you see them just standing around talking to one another, but they would be running around with all these pieces of papers flying around, and we still have some video of that. Go look it up. It's out there. We do something like it in the face-to-face class, and we'll try to video it and then put it up on the website to see. It's chaos. And people think it looks like chaos, but it's really like a big swap meet, buyers and sellers. The floor brokers were very worried that the New York Stock Exchange's aggressive moves to all electronic trading meant the end of the way of life. Well, it was not really the end. It's just a big change from face-to-face interaction to sitting in front of a computer screen all day. Does this sound familiar? What other... Here we are. I'm doing this, you know, all by myself, talking to my computer, talking to my little microphone here. And you're sitting there at a different time listening to this, maybe while you're walking the dog or, you know, driving. You know, hopefully you're just listening to it while you're driving. So, yeah, technology is changing the world, dear students. And these were brokers, right? They are, as we'll see, not market makers. They're just simply facilitating the transaction by finding a buyer or a seller and doing the trade on their behalf. As we're going to see, there's a whole other way for the transactions to occur. So hang on to your hats here. Slide 20. The specialist. Now, they're no longer called the specialist, but these folks were members who specialized in making transactions in one or more stocks. And the job of the specialist was to manage the auction process. Huh? Yeah. What happens if all of a sudden all the buyers disappear or all the sellers disappear? The specialist buys or sells the stock from their own inventory to provide a continuous, fair, and orderly market. Now, because of the tremendous volume of trading and the role of technology, the role of the specialist has essentially been squeezed out. They are involved in only a tiny amount of trading each day. And they are now called designated market makers, supplementary liquidity providers. So I want you to remember that term, market maker, because we're going to come back to that term, right? These people, their job was to get in front of the freight train. If all of a sudden the price just started falling and falling and falling because all the buyers disappeared, their job is to say, okay, you know, I'll buy. And likewise, on the other side, if all of a sudden all the sellers disappeared and everybody wanted to buy, their job was to jump in and sell. And it sounds like they're being very altruistic, meaning they, you know, they're sacrificing themselves. But no, folks. They're trying to make money like everybody else. But instead of a broker that goes out and finds somebody who owns shares who want to sell and somebody who wants to buy those shares, finds somebody who wants to buy those shares. These people are acting as a dealer. They are keeping an inventory of that stock and buying and selling it to people who want to buy and sell. Does it make sense? It'll make more sense as we go along because you're going to see that's how the other major system, the over-the-counter, works. And we're also going to see an example of the Casas de Cambio, the money exchange houses down in San Isidro and Tijuana. And it'll make more sense as we go along. Okay, so stick with us here. Now, for decades, the little kid, the little brother, the little brother was the American Stock Exchange, the Amex. It's now called the NYSE American Exchange. And the Amex was really called the CURB. The CURB? Why did they call it the CURB? Well, because they started outside on the curb, outside the New York Stock Exchange. They'd look in the window and see what was going on, and then they would trade outside on the curb. You know, it gets pretty darn cold in New York, and so they moved down the street to a building right down the street. And it was always much smaller than the New York Stock Exchange, only 3% of the volume of all exchanges. And so they saw the handwriting on the wall. They started concentrating on securities other than stocks in the early 90s. The NASDAQ purchased them in 1998. Who's the NASDAQ? Relax, we'll come back to them. And then kicked them to the curb, ha ha ha, in 2004. And then the New York Stock Exchange bought them in 2008. They moved them down the street to the same building as the New York Stock Exchange. They first changed the name to the New York Stock Exchange MKT. I guess that was Mickett or Market. I don't know. I never knew. And now they changed the name to New York Stock Exchange American. New York Stock Exchange American. I don't know. Not very catchy term. I like Amex. And, you know, this kind of thing would have made just tremendous headlines. I didn't even know what happened. When they changed it, when the New York Stock Exchange bought the Amex and changed the name to New York Stock Exchange Mickett, MKT, no one told us. And I called my boss and said, "Did you know that the New York, the Amex is no?" He goes, "Yeah, I saw something about that." Oh, the changes are happening so fast that nobody seems to really care. And as we said, they started concentrating on other securities. What are those securities? That's where the ETFs started. The exchange-traded funds were first introduced on the Amex. Now they're traded everywhere. Now they're so popular, everyone is in the act. But that was the Amex's contribution to the future. And then there are regional exchanges. The regional exchanges were basically modeled after the New York Stock Exchange. Chicago, Philadelphia, Pacific. Now, there's an interesting example, aberration. All these places are centralized locations. Boston, Denver, Cincinnati. The Devon Exchange was the one that was very dicey. They would sell questionable companies. But the Pacific Exchange was actually two places, San Francisco and Los Angeles. So figure that one out. And many of the securities listed on the regional exchanges were also available on New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, and you got a better deal probably on New York Stock Exchange. Traditionally, they were often places where undesirable or unethical issues were sold. Not always. As I said, the Denver was well known for picadillos. But lately, they've tried to diversify and differentiate themselves from the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ in order to survive. For example, the Philadelphia Exchange concentrated on semiconductor stocks. And the number of semiconductor stocks has plummeted in the last 20, 30 years. And they have not been immune to the rush to consolidate. We saw the New York Stock Exchange merge with the Euronext and then buy the Amex. Well, the New York Stock Exchange bought the Pacific Exchange, and then the NASDAQ bought the Philadelphia Exchange. You see what's going on here? Slide 23. And then remember we made mention of options and futures back in Chapter 1? Relax, we'll deal with them in detail at the end of the semester. But they have their own exchanges, although now they're available on all the other places too. But the options basically got started in Chicago. The Chicago Board Options Exchange for options, and then Chicago Board of Trade for futures. And futures are contracts that guarantee the delivery of a specified commodity at a specific future date at an agreed-to price. And it made sense that they would start in Chicago because they were selling the future of pork bellies, bacon, and corn, and wheat, because Chicago was the big jumping off place for all the Midwestern commodities. They would go to Chicago, and then they'd take the St. Lawrence River to be transferred around the world. So these exchanges dealt with options and futures. And again, well, don't worry too much about what they are. We'll deal with them later on. But now options and futures are sold everywhere. You see the urge to merge and consolidate and get bigger and bigger and bigger. So those were the exchanges. Now let's take a look at the OTC, the over-the-counter market. As we said, widely scattered telecommunication networks through which transactions of securities are made, there is no single location. And as we said, It used to be just people calling one another up. You'd call Fred in Milwaukee, who you knew he had shares of this company, and you'd say, I'll give you $25, and he'd hang up on you and call you back and say, you give me $28 or I ain't giving you a single share. These people took lessons in how to be rude to one another. It was a quote-based system. There was no double auction. There wasn't people screaming and hollering at one another in one location. Now, along comes the NASDAQ. Before, there were basically two entities, the bulletin boards and the pink sheets, as they were originally called. The NASDAQ does not want you to refer to them as the OTC because of the over-the-counter's reputation for hanky-panky and selling shares of companies that really aren't bona fide real companies. So if you go to the NASDAQ and say, oh, you're over-the-counter, they'll say, no, we're not. No, we have nothing to do with that. We're the NASDAQ. And they don't even want you to know that it came from the term National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System. No, they don't even want you to remember that. They just want to be known as the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ is a bona fide, I keep using that term, meaning real, a real place where you there are companies with that with real value. As opposed to the bulletin boards and the pink sheets, which they now call it the markets group, but it really was pink. The newspaper they would produce was made out was pink. The paper was colored pink. And so there's 5,000 of these on the bulletin board and 20 some thousand of these on the pink sheets. And this is where the penny stocks that you might hear of that you're going to make you rich, they're not going to make you rich. They're going to make you poor. But this is where those companies that really aren't real companies or somebody's garage in Iowa or Idaho or one of those places that begins with the letter I. Stay far away from these places, folks. These are the wrong side of the tracks. These are the red light district, the bad side of town. You know, there's going to be a few companies that are hit on hard times that are trying to make a go of it. But most of these are just scams. Stay away. Have I made my point? I hope I'll make it again and again. Stay away from penny stocks. So let's now talk about the role of the dealer in the over-the-counter markets. Remember we said there are brokers who facilitate transactions by finding somebody who has shares who want to sell, and the other broker finds somebody who wants to buy those shares? Well, the dealers are traders who make markets by offering to buy or sell certain securities at stated prices. They're often called market makers. Remember the specialist? This is the role of the specialist on the New York Stock Exchange. But the that's all that was on the OTC markets were dealers, were market makers. They buy and sell quotes. They offer buy and sell quotes from their own inventory of stocks, whereas the brokers simply serve as a go-between between buyers and sellers. They don't keep an inventory. And when you look at stocks on the OTC, you'll see an ask price and a bid price. And so I know they're not really the best names. If they would have asked me, which of course they're not going to, I would have said, call the ask price the retail price and the bid price the wholesale price. In other words, you see one price if you go look on the internet for associated with a stock. Wrong. There are dozens of prices at any one time. And there are basically two prices for you. What you have to pay to get that stock, and then when you sell it back to them, what they're going to give you. And technology has made it so that for vast majority of stocks, the bid and the ask price are, you know, pennies, if a penny, if that. So technology has really made this spread, the difference between the bid and the ask prices, very, very low. right? Does that make sense? I hope so. We're going to see a presentation about the casas de cambio, money exchange places down in San Ysidro and Tijuana. And I hope that'll really put it to you. That'll hope they'll show it in great detail about how these people make their money. The dealers, the market makers on the NASDAQ perform roughly the same role as the specialist on the New York Stock Exchange. So, unlike brokers who charge a commission, dealers make money from the spread of the bid and the ask prices. As we said, just as the Casas de Cambio in San Ysidro make money on the difference between the prices in which they buy and sell pesos and dollars. So you go to one of these Casas de Cambio, you see two prices. The first price is how much they will give you, how many pesos they'll give you if you give them a dollar. And then there's a higher price. That's how many pesos they want you to give them to give you back that dollar. And the difference between the two is the spread. And that's how they make their money. See, the broker's commission is reported on your statement. Although now there's brokers that don't charge a commission, figure that out. But the dealer's markup, the dealer's markdown are not reported to the customers. How do you think the internet brokers make money on $5 or $7 or $0 a trade? More later, dear students. Yes, more later. So I want you to take a look at that presentation. And this is where we'd stop in the face-to-face class and take a look at the Casas de Cambio in San Ysidro and Tijuana. Cool? Okay, do that. All right, where are we? Okay. Now, finally, we keep referring to this thing called the NASDAQ, and now we finally, on slide 27, are defining it. Again, they don't want you to know that it was originally called the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System. They just want you to know it as the NASDAQ, and it's all uppercase, which I think is dumb, but that's the way they do it. They produce it. That's the way they write it. Spell it. Okay, then what was the National Association of Securities Dealers? Well, that's gone. It's been replaced by the NASDAQ. That was the non-governmental organization that used to be responsible for self-regulation of the registered representatives and their brokerage firms, the stockbrokers. And that was they were sponsored by the Securities and Exchange Commission, but it was a non-governmental or a non-profit organization. That's done by a different organization now called FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. So what the National Association of Securities Dealers did is they said, look, we don't want to do that anymore. We're going to concentrate on the NASDAQ. And they became a private entity. Now they're publicly traded, like the New York Stock Exchange. And that's their baby now, because they created the first electronic communication network for trading securities back in 1971, providing up-to-date bid and ask prices on approximately now 3,300 stocks. The NASDAQ used to be the arena for small companies to get started. Once they became large enough, the companies would move to the New York Stock Exchange. Since the 1980s, many prestigious companies decided to stay on the NASDAQ, thank you very much, rather than move to the New York Stock Exchange. So you might have heard of some of these companies like Microsoft and Apple and Intel. Right. And there were two words that came out of the 33rd floor of the New York Stock Exchange building in the boardroom when this happened. The first one was, oh, yeah, now it's a two-horse race. For decades, the New York Stock Exchange was the place to be, the most prestigious and largest companies. But not anymore. Now the largest companies like Google and Apple and Amazon and Netflix are all trading on the NASDAQ. It's still smaller than the New York Stock Exchange, but they have the largest companies, because they're mostly tech companies. As we're going to see when we take a look at the indices, the NASDAQ index is tracking mostly tech companies. But there are some non-tech companies like Costco and Starbucks, so it's not all tech companies. Slide 28. The NASDAQ is a three-tiered system. There's the global select. Most people don't know this, and if you don't remember it, don't worry about it too much, but it's good to know. They have basically three tiers. The global select market. These are companies that would easily qualify for the New York Stock Exchange. Then they have the global market, used to be called the national market. They're larger companies. And then they have the smaller companies, the small cap market. Now they call it the capital market. It used to be called the small cap, meaning small capitalization. We'll discuss capitalization later on. We're going to learn how to calculate it. In the 1990s, the NASDAQ began positioning itself as the securities market of the future. Little jab at the New York Stock Exchange, because the New York Stock Exchange is the securities market of the past. As it became apparent that the traditional face-to-face double auction model was not adequate to keep up with the massive increase of trading. And the market capitalization is roughly, as of 2019 or so, $15 trillion. So it's still not as large as the New York Stock Exchange, but some of these companies alone Apple alone is over $1 trillion. So one company, yeah. How long is that? I don't know. We'll see. Let's see how many other companies join the $1 trillion club. Whew. So now just a few more slides, relax, because now we're going to take a look at alternate trading systems. The third market, as it's called, these are over-the-counter transactions made in securities listed on the New York Stock Exchange, listed on the Amex, or one of the organized exchanges, or the NASDAQ. But this is for institutional investors who traded in large blocks of securities. So you're a mutual fund or an insurance company or a pension plan, and you don't have 100 shares. You have 100,000 shares. So you could go to one of these over-the-counter dealers and say, look, I've got a tremendous block of shares. Do you have any people that need to buy a tremendous block of shares, like another mutual fund company or another pension fund or insurance company? And so the dealers would facilitate these large transactions, and you received a much lower cost than if you went to the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. Notice one of the examples is the Intermarket, which is purchased by the NASDAQ. The merge to urge. And then technology made the fourth market, as it was called. Mostly it was called the ECNs, Electronic Communication Networks. These started taking hold in the 1990s as the internet became more and more prevalent. These were traditionally transactions made directly between large institutional buyers and sellers, but you bypassed the dealer of the third market. You got rid of the middleman. You went right to the other mutual fund company or the other pension fund. But because of the new technology, the internet and the telecommunications, these ECNs, as they were more commonly referred to other than the fourth market, started to court retail customers. Like eBay, you could think of them like eBay. Get the two buyers and sellers together. And so one of these was called Archipelago, which is now owned by the New York Stock Exchange. Another one is called BATS. BATS stands for Better Alternative Trading System. I think it's Better Alternative. They're based out of Kansas City. They're in a strip mall in Kansas City. It's a hell of a lot cheaper to have your business in Kansas City than it is to have them in New York. With the advent of the internet, the third and the fourth markets successfully started to court retail investors. And do you think the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ are going to let that happen? They want to get a piece of that action. So they've been buying into these alternative trading systems. Whew. So go back over and study that, right? But now, let's end by just asking a few questions on slide 31. But isn't the stock market all just one big malignant casino, huh, Piano, right? Well, you know what? The answer is yes, and the answer is no. What? It depends, you know. It depends on how you perceive and how you act. Is the stock market all just one big malignant casino? Yes, for many people. There are many individuals who see the markets as one big crapshoot, one big, roulette table. For them, the way to riches is to buy and sell, buy and sell, buy and sell. Now, remember, we call these people speculators. We also call them traders, not traitor, but T-R-A-D-E-R-S. It is very difficult, folks. You're up against the best in the business, and often neophytes become very upset when the market turns against them, because it will. Yeah. All the research shows in the short term, the stock market's random. And the answer to this question is no, because many others, and I hope this is the type of investor you're going to be, they look at the capital markets as a way to participate in the growth and the prosperity of the global economy. We call these people investors. And with a long-term orientation, investors are usually very rewarded. And so here's yet another opportunity for me to interject the ageless advice from Mr. Benjamin Graham, the author of The Intelligent Investor and Warren Buffett's teacher. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and an adequate return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. I love that quote. So, what is it going to be for you? Is it going to be a malignant casino, or a vehicle for you to participate in the growth and prosperity of the global economy? Oh yeah, Piano, slide 32. What about Enron, huh? Enron, some of you probably don't remember Enron, but that was the biggest corporate, I think there's been bigger ones now, but I think it was the biggest corporate bankruptcy in history. Aren't corporations all crooks? You know, folks, capitalism might be the worst economic system ever created, except for all the others. Fraud and accounting, trickery and gimmicks have always been with us. They are always going to be with us. Have you heard the saying? Because that's where the money is. It was attributed to a bank robber. He didn't really actually say it, but it's a great quote. Why do you rob banks, Mr. Horton? Willie Sutton. Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. He didn't actually say that, but some reporters said he did. Normally, but not always, folks, these firms are regulated to the nether reaches of the OTC. This is where the penny stocks are, the bulletin boards, the pink sheets, that's where the hanky-panky goes on. But every once in a while, an Enron creeps in. But for every one Enron, there are hundreds, no thousands of companies that continue to do business with integrity and honesty, usually. You know, sometimes there's... In 1973, it was Equity Funding. Now, you know, I have no idea who these people were. It was an insurance company, and they literally would go in a room and make up policies. They would just say these people were real. They weren't real. They were just phony people who were supposedly making payments to their life insurance policies, and they weren't. It didn't last very long. I mean, you can't... You just can't keep something like that going very long. In 1986, it was Ivan Boesky and Michael Milken and Vagabond Inns. Huh? Vagabond Inns? They're based here in San Diego. You've probably seen them every once in a while. He was using Vagabond Inns to sell these bonds, which that's where the term junk bond came. And there was no way they were going to pay off all the bonds. And of course, Vagabond Ends almost disappeared, but it's resurrected. In 2002, it was Enron, Global Crossing, Tyco, WorldCom. In 2008, it was Fannie, Freddie, Lehman Brothers, Citi, WaMu, Wachovia, and American International Group. And don't forget Bernie Madoff! 10 or 20 years from now, during the next big bull market craze, someone else will take their place. Fraud and accounting have been with us always. They are always going to be with us. That's why we, in this class, are going to concentrate on the large cap, they're called, companies with their roots deep in the economy. And yeah, we're going to take a look at a few small companies that have the potential to make it big, but have more of a potential to just disappear. Slide 33. To recap, the securities markets exist to allow investors a safe, cost-effective, efficient method to participate in the success of the global economy. And even with all the underhanded shenanigans, they have performed very well. They are changing at breakneck speed, and that change is accelerating. Now, whether or not we have one or more global 24-hour trading markets remains to be seen. I don't think it's going to happen, but it might. You know, it's 2 a.m. in the morning. You want to sell your 100 shares of McDonald's. But it is exciting and for some people scary to watch, especially for those who have a stake in the outcome. Cool. So stocks are exciting. Stocks are sexy. Stocks are risky. And we've learned about the different places where stocks are traded and sold. In our next presentation, we'll learn about transactions and brokerage firms and quotes and the like. So we'll see you in our next presentation, and we hope you're enjoying this class. Again, we want this to be the best class you've ever taken. We want you to be awesome. We want you to be the best investors the world has ever seen. You're going to speak with authority. You're going to be the investment guru for your friends and family. They are going to be just amazed at you. And cool. See ya.